WPA3 is the latest and greatest, but we've also got WEP and WPA, WPA2. Can you tell us like what we should not be using and what we should
totally,
be using?
Totally. Yeah? So very short answer to this question, never use WEP and WPA original, WPA1. It's called the WPA without the one, but don't use that stuff because it's crackable in seconds today.
This device that you see right here is actually called our Sidekick 2, and it's our all-in-one measurement device for Wi-Fi. So it scans everything in Wi-Fi in the 2.4, 5, 6 gigahertz frequency bands, but not just Wi-Fi. It also has an inbuilt super fast high resolution spectrum analyzer. So as you walk around your environment, not only will it detect your Wi-Fi access points, your neighbor's Wi-Fi access points, but if you have any interference and get attacked by a fly, it will pick up if you've got any microwave ovens, passive infrared devices, Bluetooth, wireless, non-Wi-Fi cameras, and captures everything at the same time as you move around your environment.
I'm here with my Wi-Fi experts, Mac and Matt from Echo Hub. Now, this is a technical video. I'm going to ask you a bunch of technical questions that I get.
So you'll be throwing us under the bus every 5 minutes then.
That's about right, yes. So
looking forward to it.
First question, right? WPA3, why is it better and should I be using it today?
Okay, so WPA3 is the newest, latest and greatest security suite. It was introduced and forced to use in 6 gigahertz band. So the reality is if you have 6 gigahertz, you have to be using WPA3, it's mandatory. And the legacy bands, they don't have to use WPA3, it's optional. So now let's talk about if it's more secure than WPA2. What's your take on it, Matt?
Yeah, so WPA3 is the successor to WPA2, and it offers us extra encryption and it's stronger than WPA2. Why would we not use it? Well, you may have some older devices in your environment that don't support it. So you have to think about how you're going to be configuring your wireless networks in 2024 and beyond. Because if you just decide to blanketly configure your SSID that's broadcasted across your frequency bands, across 2.4, 5 and 6 gigahertz with WPA3, and you have new devices come in like your iPhone, your iPad, MacBooks and Windows devices, they may support WPA3 and can connect to the network no problem at all. But if you've got some older devices that may be a bit legacy or not been around for the last few years, they then come in the following day and try and connect to the Wi-Fi, they may not be able to associate at all, and you're going to be getting a lot of support calls or people calling you in the middle of the night, David, my Wi-Fi doesn't work, how can you help me?
They wouldn't call David, they would call you.
That's right.
And I'll be forwarding it to David. David said turn on WPA3, so.
Okay, so WPA3 is the latest and greatest, but we've also got WEP and WPA, WPA2. Can you tell us like what we should not be using and what we should
totally,
be using?
Totally. Yeah? So very short answer to this question, never use WEP and WPA original, WPA1. It's called the WPA without the one, but don't use that stuff because it's crackable in seconds today. And by crackable, I mean it has an encryption. So your traffic is encrypted when you send it over the air. And when I capture your traffic from the air, I can't decrypt it as easily. But with WEP and WPA, I can find an encryption. Well, I can decrypt your traffic very, very easily. So don't use that. WPA2 is still considered secure for as long as your key is long.
And now don't use Spider-Man as my password, right?
Yeah, so you're
actually, unless you put an exclamation on the end, because then that makes it really secure.
Okay, that's a joke, right? Just so everyone
and a
didn't
number.
Get it.
And 123 is the most common. So password, then exclamation, then 123.
Oh, is that the most common password, right?
Yeah, well, don't use that. So guys, for as long as you have password that is not in WPA2, that is non-dictionary, that is fairly long, and it has different characters, then you're good, okay? Because you can't brute force it, really, because it will take you years or tens of years, and it's not really practical. And you can't guess it. So you're good to go. However, if you know password in WPA2, when you're using personal PSK, I can put in this password in Wireshark, for example, and take the decrypt encryption off from all your Wi-Fi frames. So probably not the brightest idea, is it?
No. So the problem with pre-shared key is kind of in the name, that is pre-shared. So if David, you know the key, and I know the key, and Mac knows the key, we can then use that, and any wireless traffic that is sent to somewhere that's unencrypted, perhaps if you go to a website that's HTTP rather than HTTPS, then anything that is sent to that could be easily decrypted and seen by anyone.
Clear text, basically, right?
So give us some best practices. You said password must be of a certain length, right? Must be like good, like mixed characters. Any other good practices if I'm using WPA2?
Non-dictionary. And also there are actually quite a few nice practices. So WPA2 for as long, WPA2 PSK, I mean personal, is secure for as long as the password is secure and it's not shared between different people or groups of people. So long password, not known. You can distribute it to your devices using MDM, apps, QR codes. We can even use something like IPSK, MPSK, PPSK.
What is that? Sorry.
So I was about to say that. So that's the same thing, named differently by different vendors. But basically, it means that people or groups of people, they can be using their own dedicated pre-shared keys. So if a pre-shared key for me is compromised, maybe yours is still cool. So your traffic is still encrypted. So that adds to security quite massively.
So you mentioned PSK. What's the alternative for, because I mean, PSK seemed, correct me if I'm wrong, is okay perhaps for home, but not the best for business, right?
Yeah, so if you're running a business, you have a corporate environment, the most likely type of authentication you're probably going to use is something that's called RADIUS or 802.1x authentication. And what that basically means is that you're going to have some sort of RADIUS server somewhere, maybe in your network or somewhere else, that you can authenticate users either by doing a certificate-based authentication or they're logging in with like username and password. So it adds extra layers of authentication and encryption. So it makes it much more challenging for bad actors to get access to the wireless network or to intercept any of that traffic. But then there are some caveats and things you want to think around with RADIUS authentication, because a big thing in Wi-Fi is being mobile and being able to move around an environment like where we are now, Cisco Live, and easily switch between different access points or in your office, your warehouse. You want to be able to roam fast. The thing is, when you do a RADIUS authentication, when you do that initial connection, it can actually take quite a long time, because you're not just going from your wireless client device to the wireless access point and to the controller to, you know, exchange a set of passphrase for a pre-shared key. When there's RADIUS server involved, there's a lot more step sets in place. So you go from the wireless client device to the access point. Yeah. Access point forwards that onto the controller, that forwards it onto the RADIUS server. The RADIUS server checks your credentials, your certificate, passes.
And the RADIUS server can be in a different country or in a different continent, and it can take like a second or two or four.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly. And then when you roam, what would happen if you don't have anything turned on from like a fast roaming amendment, what would happen is each time you go from access point to access point, you have to do that full RADIUS authentication that can take anywhere up to a second, a couple of seconds. And in Wi-Fi, that's a really long time.
Yeah.
So you want to try and reduce that as much as you can by using something called 802.11r, fast transition, if you're in the Cisco world like we are today. And what that basically does, it'll speed up that roaming time between going between access point and access point, because you don't have to do that full authentication to the RADIUS server each time. It's cached and stored locally on the access points, and there's other ways around we can do it too.
That's a very good point. So what we've discussed so far is the PSK, that's a personal, right? WPA2 PSK, you have a key, and then WPA2 Enterprise that uses the RADIUS for backend authentication of users, and also that it's great to use something that we call 802.11r, fast transition, FT, to make sure that you don't have to go back to RADIUS every time you switch from AP to AP when you walk around your premises.
But you mentioned something offline about the, instead of using PSK, there's a new thing, is that right?
There is. So PSK, pre-shared key, is the WPA and WPA2 thing. And that means if I know your password, I can decrypt your Wi-Fi traffic, right? So that's a little bit risky. It doesn't have to be too bad if your password is strong. But in WPA3, we've replaced the PSK with SAE, simultaneous authentication of equals. And SAE is a direct successor to PSK. We don't have PSKs anymore. Now we have just SAE. And SAE is quite cool because even if I know your password, I won't be able to decrypt your traffic. So your password in SAE is used for authentication of user, of you. You use your password, but it's not used for encryption anymore. Encryption is derived automatically from a very simple sounding Diffie-Hellman algorithm that basically means that it works in one way. So I can encrypt your traffic, but I can't use the same password to decrypt your traffic. So that's quite fascinating, isn't it?
I believe there's even more security with WPA3, because with WPA2, the way that you crack it is you de-author clients, you capture the handshake, right? And then you just run brute force against that and try and decrypt it. Is that solved in WPA3?
Yeah, exactly that. So something that's enforced with WPA3 is also management frame protection, or protected management frames, depending on what vendor or how you're talking to somebody in the industry, how they'll be referring to that. And that is to kind of mitigate exactly what you just mentioned has happened there about clients getting deauthenticated from the management frames and then reassociate into a malicious or rogue access point that they shouldn't be connecting to, or honeypot AP. And then they share their credentials, which is what we want to try and avoid as much as possible.
So basically, your question was how to exploit IP, PEEP, authentication method using WPA Enterprise, either WPA 1 or 2 or 3. Actually, Enterprise is pretty much identical between WPA 2 and WPA 3. The only difference between these two is the encryption length of a key, optional. But yeah, so that was EPIP. EPIP requires users' credentials to authenticate to the wireless network, and it's easier to use than certificate-based authentication. So EPIP requires username and password, and it's still validated against the Radius server in the backend. And the easy thing about it is that you don't have to install a certificate on your user device. Installing a certificate on your user device can be quite complicated. You need to have an infrastructure for it. You need to upload it somehow, install it somehow. If you ask the user, they probably won't. So that's why we are using EPIP. And EPIP asking you for credentials is risky because, as you said, without management frames protection, we can deauthenticate all the users and force them or encourage them to connect to an attacker's AP and then harvest their credentials and then have access to their, I don't know, an email or whatever other services they're using. So yeah, good question.
Did de-auth attacks work against WPA 3 then, or was that solved?
This attack will work against WPA 3 as well because we are not trying to decrypt the traffic. We are just harvesting users' credentials.
So if I send a bunch of like de-auth messages to the AP, I can kick the users off even in WPA 3?
WPA 3, you're probably asking about the MFP, and MFP or PMF, Management Frames Protection, is enforced now. So if you're using WPA 3, you will be using PMF or MFP. So you cannot do de-auth attack. So you can attack the users that are just connecting to the network. They might be coming to your access point, but you can't deauthenticate existing users. So it is, of course, more secure. However, you can configure MFP, PMF on old legacy bands on 2.4 and 5 as well, but then you are risking compatibility, right? Older devices, they simply won't be able to connect to an SSID that uses MFP, PMF, whatever you call that. And if they don't support it, they won't connect.
Guys, I'm a bit slow, right? People call me a boomer on my videos, even though I'm not. But
yeah, and call me a slug.
I'm a bit slow. So just make it clear for me. In some of my videos that I've done in the past with WPA2, I've had a Wi-Fi watch that can de-auth clients. So that doesn't work anymore in WPA 3. Is that correct?
That is correct, because management frames protection or protection of management frames, MFP, PMF, will stop you from deauthentication attack, and it's as simple as that.
And if I try to de-auth, I mean, that's not going to work, but let's assume that even if I could capture the management frame, in the past with WPA 2, I'd de-auth, the client would connect, I'd capture that, and then I would use a GPU or the cloud to try and crack the password. That also doesn't work.
So that might work because PMF behavior, it doesn't change between WPA 2 and WPA 3.
Okay, but is that something that you can configure to stop those kind of attacks?
I don't think you really can.
Okay, so in a lot of my videos, and I'm talking about like PSK, so like a home device, I had like a little TP-Link router and I got an iPhone to connect to it. So what I'd use is Kali Linux to de-auth the phone, right? It would reconnect, I'd capture the handshake, and then I'd use a GPU to crack it. That's no longer possible, if I understand right, in WPA 3, personal, right?
So SAE now, it's not possible, no. Because of Diffie-Hellman one-way algorithm, okay. You can encrypt it, but you can't decrypt it.
So do you guys have like a summary about WPA 3? Like what's the sales deck, if you like, to an executive? Why you want WPA 3?
The quick 30-second pitch. Okay, so the simple answer is it's a lot more secure because you have management frame protection. So if David's around your environment, which you may or may not want, trying to de-off your client devices, they're going to be protected from...
He's not wearing a watch.
We're safe. Okay. Now, his watch is not wearing his day. But even if he was, if we're using WPA 3 with management frame protection, we are going to be safe because we can't get deauthenticated from the watch because the management frames protection is going to be enabled by default. So that's safe, much better than WPA 2 that doesn't have it turned on, or WPA 1 from before. And then also you asked if somehow you were able to deauthenticate the device and it did connect to one of your honeypot access points or rogue APs and you were able to capture that four-way handshake. With WPA 3, it doesn't use PSK anymore. It uses SAE, simultaneous authentication of equals, which uses Diffie-Hellman. So even if you were to capture the device, you wouldn't be able to decrypt it using one of your fancy Kali Linux boxes and GPUs to try and crack it.
So basically, you cannot brute force the encryption key on WPA 3 personal SAE. Not possible.
Just for the people who don't have WPA 3 yet, best practice for WPA 2 is make it long so the GPUs, even if you had big GPUs, it wouldn't be able to crack it, right?
That's correct. So if I capture your WPA PSK personal traffic, I am able to use the dictionary attacks to guess your password. If that doesn't work, I can start doing a brute force attack with my GPUs against your encrypted traffic. And if the password is short, I will be able to crack it. If it's longer, then there is no way I would be able to crack that if I don't know the password already.
You guys mentioned six gigahertz, right? So can you explain the bands and what 6 gigahertz is and why it's important?
Totally, I'd love to. So in Wi-Fi, since like the very late 1990s and early 2000s, we've had access to two Wi-Fi frequency bands, 2.4 gigahertz and 5 gigahertz. And the thing with 2.4 gigahertz is we only have a small chunk of usable spectrum. So there's inside of these Wi-Fi frequency bands, we use something that's called channels. And in the 2.4 gigahertz frequency band, we only actually have, depending on where you are, most places, three channels that don't overlap with each other. And the 2.4 gigahertz frequency band is so susceptible to non-wireless interference. You're going to find things like microwave ovens, Bluetooth, wireless, non-Wi-Fi video cameras happening in your environment, causing you interference. So it's just not that much usable spectrum there. However, with 5 gigahertz, we have a lot more usable spectrum. So actually up to, like, depending on where you are, 500 megahertz of spectrum, and we have a lot more non-overlapping channels. So depending on where you are, up to 25 non-overlapping 20 megahertz wide channels, which is fantastic because more spectrum, but there's a whole bunch of rules we have to follow on some of those channels that could be impacted by what's called radar or DFS activity. And the amount of wireless devices that are now connecting to the network, if you think how many millions or billions of devices there are. If you think about Wi-Fi in the term of you're driving along a highway or a motorway, 2.4 and 5 gigahertz, that gives us access to the two lanes to drive down. And we have got our cars on the motorway. Why we need to have 6 gigahertz is because we got to the point where these motorway lanes are just getting too congested. There's even with the 5 gigahertz band, too many devices connecting. Yeah. So we needed 6 gigahertz. But Mac, why do we need 6 gigahertz so much?
Yeah, good question. So 6 gigahertz not only gives us more frequency band, more lines on the motorway, but also it's less congested. So it means we'll have less cars on that motorway. So we not only have bigger motorways, but we can also go faster on these motorways. So that's very basically 6 gigahertz. More frequency is always better. And how about the Europe versus States?
Yeah, so depending on where you are in the world, you may have slightly more access to the 6 gigahertz frequency band. So over in the US, they actually get up to 1.2 gigahertz of additional wider spectrum they can use. However, us over here in Europe, we get an additional 500 megahertz.
Unlucky.
Yeah, still amazing. We needed that extra motorway to be able to be driving along to get us the extra capacity we need for all of these wireless devices that are coming out there. So yeah, it's fantastic we got access to this, but 6 gigahertz does bring us some more challenges because we have to think around different device classifications. That's a lot of wireless channels now that we have to scan for our client devices. So how do we
discover Wi-Fi, right?
How do we discover wireless networks? There's so many channels to scan across all those frequency bands. So yeah, lots of challenges with 6 gigahertz as well.
For a lot of people watching, Wi-Fi 7, I see vendors already releasing Wi-Fi 7. But can you guys explain like what's important today? Like Wi-Fi 6, Wi-Fi 5 maybe even, I don't know, Wi-Fi 6E, 7?
Yep, totally. So to make it quite short, Wi-Fi 5 is still relevant and Wi-Fi 5 is 802.11ac. It works in 5 gigahertz frequency band, only 5 gigahertz, okay? And then in 2021, we ratified Wi-Fi 6 standard. And the standard from IEEE is called 802.11ax, and it defines Wi-Fi operation in 2.4, 5, and 6 gigahertz frequency bands. Okay, so now we have three bands. It's a lot of bands. So that's 802.11ax. To make things simple, we have an organization called the Wi-Fi Alliance that tests interoperability based on a subset of functionality from IEEE standards. I know it can be quite confusing, but it really isn't. Well, it is a little bit, okay?
So
Wi-Fi 6 is the Wi-Fi Alliance interoperability name for 802.11ax, and it tests interoperability across two frequency bands, 2.4 and 5 only. But then, since 6 gigahertz is available to us in most countries around the world, we now can start testing interoperability of devices, AX devices, on 6 gigahertz band. And that's what Wi-Fi Alliance calls Wi-Fi 6E. It's still Wi-Fi 6, but E stands for extended, and it captures 6 gigahertz band. So again, Wi-Fi 6 works on 2.4, 5, and 6 gigahertz bands. Okay, well, Wi-Fi 6 tests interoperability on 2.4 and 5, Wi-Fi 6E on 6 gigahertz, and all of them, Wi-Fi 6 and Wi-Fi 6E, it's the same standard, 802.11ax.
Okay, and 7?
Wi-Fi 7 is the latest new standard of Wi-Fi that we'll be getting ratified at some point this year. And what Wi-Fi 7 will be, it actually work across 2.4, 5 and 6 gigahertz. So there will be big benefits to Wi-Fi 7, but the main benefit being is that it still supports 6 gigahertz. 6 gigahertz is the future of Wi-Fi. So Wi-Fi 7, the fact that it operates in the 6 gigahertz frequency band as well as 2.4 and 5 gigahertz, that is still the main benefit of Wi-Fi 7.
I've seen some vendors like, I know we won't mention names, like, Wi-Fi 7 is the best. We've got a Wi-Fi 7 router. Should I buy Wi-Fi 7 devices today?
Fantastic question. So the reality is that you might buy, order some Wi-Fi 7 APs, but you don't have pretty much any Wi-Fi 7 capable devices. So if you are thinking about buying Wi-Fi today, think about Wi-Fi in more 6 gigahertz categories. So 6 gigahertz is still the most important thing. So buying 6E today is more mature. It's nothing wrong with buying 6E today and then 5 years from now or 7 years from now, whatever your cycle is to replace your APs, go for Wi-Fi 7 or Wi-Fi 8. It doesn't matter as much as people think because Wi-Fi 6E, we have 6 gigs already. So now Wi-Fi 6 plus Wi-Fi 6E, both of them combined is pretty much the Wi-Fi 7. Wi-Fi 7 adds some new functionality, but basically it's almost the same. Slightly faster, slightly more advanced functionality. Like in Wi-Fi 7, what's the biggest advantage of Wi-Fi 7 versus Wi-Fi 6E, Matt?
Being honest, most likely going to see the biggest benefits of Wi-Fi 7 at home. In the enterprise, maybe not so much, because there's this new thing called MLO, which stands for multi-link operation, where you're going to be able to send your traffic out of the different radios and the frequency bands of the device from the access point to the client device. But how often are we going to see that in the enterprise? I highly doubt it. So we are going to be getting faster data rates, more complex modulation. So it means we can send our wireless data faster in Wi-Fi 7. But again,
just a few percent faster. Because now we are using 4K QAM versus 1K QAM.
Exactly. Still, the biggest benefit is going to be 6 gigahertz, the access to the additional highway motorway lane that you get to drive down your nice 6 gigahertz
capable
cars.
We're talking about the future. How about Wi-Fi 8? What's going to be great about Wi-Fi 8?
Is it coming anytime soon?
Not anytime soon, but we start to have a glimpse into what it can consist of.
Sorry, I wanted to differentiate between home and enterprise because I think that's a good differentiation. So at home, if I'm going to buy a Wi-Fi router today or AP, would I try and get a Wi-Fi 7 or wait?
If you're purchasing a wireless device now for your home or even for the enterprise, you would go with the latest that you can get. So at home, you're probably going to find consumer grade wireless routers that support Wi-Fi 7, but there's not many enterprise grade wireless access points that are available right now that support Wi-Fi 7. So going for the latest that's supported with 6 gigahertz capabilities, Wi-Fi 6E, is still the main thing.
But for home, it might be a little bit different. With Wi-Fi 7, we have the MLO, as you mentioned, multiple link operation, and it can combine multiple non-adjacent channels, even across different frequencies, into one massive giga channel. So think of it, I can have like a one channel, 20 megahertz on 5 gigahertz, two channels on 6 gigahertz, combine them into one massive motorway, and I can send my traffic that way. But most clients most likely will not support it, but what will support it is the home mesh systems. So think about like having a main router in your living room and then satellites in your, like, you know, bedroom one and bedroom two. That's where the MLO will be super beneficial for Wi-Fi 7. So if you can leverage that, that's fine. But the reality is Wi-Fi 6E is fantastic, okay? So nothing wrong with going with Wi-Fi 6 and 6E today.
It's probably a redundant question. Is it worth ripping out Wi-Fi 6E in the enterprise for Wi-Fi 7, or should I just wait?
I wouldn't be ripping out Wi-Fi 6E, 6 gigahertz for Wi-Fi 7.
Yeah, I had a short answer. I just wanted to say no.
And at home?
No.
No, if you have a much older device, like if you think about Wi-Fi 4 or previous or even Wi-Fi 5, then I would consider it. But if you've just upgraded to Wi-Fi 6E and you've got 6 gigahertz, then for me personally, I don't see the benefit right now.
And I mean, you guys have said it a few times, but I think I want to drive it home. The piece that some people seem to forget is it's not the APs, it's all the client devices that's a problem, right?
Yeah, so your wireless network only works the best as your worst device that you support on the network. So if you can have Wi-Fi 7 access points everywhere, but you bring an old, really legacy device that's a scanner or phone that supports just 802.11n, which is Wi-Fi 4, then when your client device connects to the access point, it's only going to be leveraging Wi-Fi 4 technology. So you have this fancy Wi-Fi 7, but your wireless is only going to be operating a Wi-Fi 4 with the worst case of the device that you got connected to the network. If you've got a home enterprise that's got just Wi-Fi 7 access points and Wi-Fi 7 capable client devices, then fantastic. But there's not that many of them around right now.
You guys are from Ekahau. You've got this fancy device here. What is it? And, you know, what does it do? And what do you guys do, like, professionally?
Sure. So this device that you see right here is actually called our Psychic 2, and it's our all-in-one measurement device for Wi-Fi. So it scans everything in Wi-Fi in the 2.4, 5, 6 gigahertz frequency bands, but not just Wi-Fi. It also has an inbuilt, super-fast, high-resolution spectrum analyzer. So as you walk around your environment, not only will it detect your Wi-Fi access points, your neighbor's Wi-Fi access points, but if you have any interferers and get attacked by a fly, it will pick up if you've got any microwave ovens, passive infrared devices, Bluetooth, wireless, non-Wi-Fi cameras, and it captures everything at the same time as you move around your environment. But what else is inside this device, Mac?
Well, the biggest battery we can take into commercial airplane. So that's quite cool, like a full day surveying battery life kind of thing. But also, it's extremely easy to take a Sidekick for a walk, just connect it to your phone. And today, you don't even need to use a map. You don't need to scale up the map with any laser measure tools. You just connect it to your phone, hit the button, walk around, and your phone will find out the layout of your building as you walk around. It will mark the walls, create a floor plan for you, and then a Sidekick will be measuring all the Wi-Fi and electromagnetic RF energy stuff all around you and place all the information on the map that you can then use not only to design your new network on, but also to optimize your existing Wi-Fi. So it's never been easier. I would say easy peasy, lemon squeezy.
So last question. Can people reach out to you if they've got Wi-Fi questions? And where's, like, Twitter, X? Where can they reach you guys?
Yeah, of course. Any questions you have, we would love to hear from you. So you can find myself on Twitter, LinkedIn, X, TikTok, whatever you like. My user account is just at Matt Starling. How about you?
And my handle is at Mac Daring. But reach out to Matt, okay? And also his email is...
So we won't... Yeah, well done. So for everyone watching, I put their links below. Also links to Ekahau. Big thanks to Ekahau for sponsoring this video and supporting the community. Let me know in the comments if you enjoy these types of videos. These guys really know Wi-Fi, so I want to get your questions answered. So put them below, and hopefully we can get you guys back for more tips and tricks on Wi-Fi.
Thanks for having us, mate.
Yeah, thank you, David, so much for bringing us on. We'd love to be here.